Hi, my name is Matt. I'm the founder of Regeneration Projects, a small business that sees two great bays and a river as our most important business partners. We started at a kitchen table during Melbourne's epic COVID-19 lockdown, and now we're a B Corp and actor in the UN decade on ecosystem restoration. As we begin this episode, we'd like to acknowledge the two great bays, Port Phillip and Western Port, which are known to First Peoples as Nam and Wurrumbirrin, or Murrumbik. Without the bays and the Birrarung Yarra River, we wouldn't be in business today. So we show deep respect to First Nations elders, past and present, who for over 60,000 years have cared for the bays, Birrarung, and their catchment areas. Their ecological knowledge inspires us to practice business in partnership with nature. Now, choosing a career that tackles environmental issues like climate change, biodiversity loss, or pollution can be incredibly rewarding, but also super tough. When we listen to the stories of passionate and pioneering professionals, it stokes our inner fire and belief so that we can keep doing the work that we know needs to be done to benefit future generations. That's what the Two Bays podcast is all about. Stories of hope, grit, and determination, inspiring the planet's next generation of ecological leaders and entrepreneurs. This series is made in partnership with the Mornington Peninsula Shire Council and celebrates the stories of business and community champions at the forefront of local climate action. Let's tune in. Womanjika, welcome and come with purpose to the Two Bays podcast. My name is Matt Sykes, and along with Claire Weil, we're super excited to be kickstarting this new podcast and this first series, which is a collaboration with the Mornington Peninsula Shire Council and some incredible local businesses and organisations that are in different parts of the Mornington Peninsula, just outside of Melbourne. Now, this series is all about climate action. It's about things that you can do that support the climate and the environment around us, but also the health of our businesses and our local economies. And as we kickstart, we'd like to just take a moment to acknowledge those connections to Boonwurrung and Bunurong country, Nam Port Phillip, and also Wurrumbirrin or Murrumbik, Western Port, the two bays after which this podcast is named, but also the cultural connections to these beautiful waterways and their catchments. So in particular, elders past and present, and people like Ngawi Dr. Carolyn Briggs, who we're very fortunate to be able to work with at Regeneration Projects. Also, I guess water is one of those things that connects us all, and it really inspires us all to take on that custodianship role. Guest speakers today, Mel Barker, CEO of Western Port Biosphere, and Tom Heine, co-founder and CEO of Sun Butter Skincare, two amazing people that I've been fortunate to get to know across these past years, but really excited to be spotlighting and celebrating their work through this episode. Mel, I'm going to pass straight to you. Why is climate action so important and also urgent for the Mornington Peninsula as a region?
Thanks, Matt. I guess there's a couple of aspects to that. One is the Mornington Peninsula is internationally significant. So it was recognised by the United Nations through UNESCO about 20 years ago as being a biosphere reserve, which is a place that's got, you know, internationally significant environment. And separately to that, part of the Mornington Peninsula fringes Western Port, which is also an internationally significant wetland under the Ramsar Convention. So you've got these two levels of international significance that the area has been recognised for. So I guess that's, you know, we need to be a leader as a result because of this special environment that we get to live in and work in, and lots of people come to visit. And I guess the other aspect for me is that the Mornington Peninsula is, you know, a coastal environment. And what we know from all the science is it's those coastal environments that are going to be particularly impacted by climate change. So it's really important that we're all doing what we can to mitigate those impacts.
Brilliant, Mel. And thanks so much for being with us on the Two Bays podcast. Tom, passing it across to you, what's your take on why climate action is so important for the peninsula?
Yeah, g'day, Matt, Claire, Mel. I completely agree with what Mel said. I think another aspect would be sort of what ticks the economy of the peninsula over, and it's very much a sort of tourism-driven, small-scale agriculture, and people are here to see the beautiful coastline that, that Mel touched on. We're famous for our vineyards, we're famous for our national parks, and these are some of the first things that are going to feel the wrath of climate change. The coastline in some parts is already having a bit of a battering with bigger storm surges and bigger wave events. And, you know, we've had two nice days of weather and already we're on a total fire ban. So that's today. And strong northerly winds. Hopefully the CFAs are all prepped and no one does anything silly, but we're really sort of living and breathing the initial effects of climate change down here and what we base our livelihoods on. So I think action on it is imperative, really, to keep the peninsula ticking along.
I might jump in here now. Kia ora, everyone. It's Claire here. Tom, I would love to hear from you a little bit more about the point you just made in relation to business and climate being so deeply related on the peninsula. From your perspective, how does, well, firstly, how did your business come to be? And secondly, how does its core purpose relate to climate action and what you've discussed?
Yeah, thanks, Claire. So I run a sunscreen and skincare company called Sun Butter Skincare. And we were founded back in 2016. My partner and my sort of background is marine biology, tropical ecology. And a lot of research was showing how harmful common cosmetics, especially sunscreen ingredients, are to coral reef and also temperate oceans like the kelp forests and the seagrass meadows we have down here, or the bryozoan reefs. And we were in and out of tropical oceans all day for work. So we wanted to make sure that what we're putting on our skin protected our skin and didn't hurt the planet. So voila, Sunbud was born. And just sort of living that cause of protecting people and the planet has been really, really key to our business forever. So that's why we've always offset all our carbon emissions and been plastic free and vegan and reef safe and palm oil free, just trying to create good products with as tiny an impact on the planet as possible. I think the second part about business being intertwined with climate change, it doesn't matter what industry you're in, at some point you are relying on the planet, and a planet facing the impact of climate change is going to be in turmoil. We saw just from a tiny little pandemic, how interrupted global supply chains were, how rapidly prices for everything went up or items became scarce, and sort of that mob human mentality, everyone just panic bought often the most pointless items. I think as we see climate change and rougher seas and more conflict due to scarce resources, that's only going to get worse for anyone running any type of business. So sort of intertwining your business with mitigating your impact, I think, makes sense from an economical point of view and from a planet point of view looking forward.
Tom, I love those two perspectives that you've just raised there, that idea of running a business that both minimizes its negative impacts on the natural environment and also works in a complementary way with the natural environment to safeguard essentially the longevity and sustainability of your business. I really love that notion and that perspective that you're bringing. Mel, I'd love to switch to you now and hear a little bit more about how your work and your organisation came to be.
Thanks, Claire. So we came to be just over 20 years ago now. And one of the things I love about our history is it was led by the community. So the community said, this is a really special part of the world and we want it to be internationally recognised as being special. So a group of community members worked with local government and state government and the Commonwealth government to effectively take an application to UNESCO to be part of this biosphere reserve network. So there's about 750 around the world, but there's only 5 in Australia, and we're the only one in the southeast. So it's a pretty incredible achievement by these local community members 20 years ago to bring it into being. So the reserve was recognised in 2002, and then in 2003 the foundation itself came into being. And we align what we do to the UNESCO Biosphere Reserve thing. So it's all about connecting people and nature and recognising that these aren't two distinct things, but they're actually integrated and interdependent on each other. And so in terms of climate action, we have a number of key pillars of our work, and climate action is definitely one of those pillars. And so we have a number of programs that focus on what we can do in partnership with other organisations to help tackle it locally.
Mel, I love that. And maybe just building on those initiatives that you talked about, I would love to hear more about how those work in practice and the kind of impact you're having.
Sure. So I guess one of them picks up on some of the things that Tom were mentioning, which is around the seagrass meadows and some of the other systems that are in Western Port, so this internationally significant Ramsar wetland. And so there's mangroves and seagrass and salt marsh there, and these are collectively known as blue carbon because they're really effective at drawing down carbon from the atmosphere and locking it up into the muds. So they're 30 to 50 times more effective than a plant on land. And so we ended up partnering with 7 local councils saying it'd be great to map what's there now and what was there historically, sort of 200 years ago, but also what are the opportunities to regenerate some of these ecosystems so that they can draw down even more carbon. So we've taken that initial kind of mapping and analysis work and are now got a larger scale project. And part of that's around community education so that, you know, all of us who live down here can understand how important these ecosystems are and how they can help to protect us. Because the other thing that is being shown is that as, you know, there's more storm surges and the like, that mangroves are incredibly effective at protecting against coastal erosion. So it's one of those, you know, nature-based solutions that if we start now and sort of implement it over the next few years, then that will help us down the track.
Oh, Mel, that's such a brilliant example. I think two things to pick up on there, both related. The first is around regeneration and the second is around nature-based solutions. I think they're two words that we hear talked about a lot, especially in the sustainability world. And I think both from the perspective of businesses and organisations as well as individuals, it can be really hard to understand what that actually looks like in practice and what that really means. And so I think all of that work that you're doing around community education and really using local examples to understand what the dependencies are, interdependencies, between humans and nature, and also what we can do about that to protect and regenerate nature as well, I think is so important, and that I feel will be really key to helping other individuals and organisations take action themselves on regeneration and on nature-based solutions. Tom, I'd love to continue this conversation around solutions by turning back to you and just asking if you have any stories to share around how Sunbutter Skincare has taken action on climate change.
Golly, Claire, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I guess just harking back to sort of one of my previous points, when we created the business accidentally, really, we just started off making sunscreen for the two of us, and it snowballed into the company we run now with employees and 1,000 retailers and things like that. It was always really important. So we, from the start, have worked hard to offset all of our emissions and aiming to offset more than any of our emissions. And we try and partner where possible with local or sort of nationwide native fauna planting, where it's going to get locked up in a 99-year conservation covenant. And it just feels like the right thing to do, really, as I touched on earlier, as a business operating on the planet and relying on the planet for our business to operate, we should do our best to give back. So we've been really pleased and have managed to take the team on a couple of big tree planting events, which is always a good bit of bonding and a good giggle as you slide around in the mud. But things like that, really, I think it's small steps that businesses can take, but they can have a big impact. And it also opens conversation up and people wonder why you're here. And, you know, there weren't many other businesses planting trees at the event. There were a few individuals and they sort of thought, oh, I know someone that runs this firm or does that. Maybe I can lean on them next year. So hopefully next year it's just a great big corporate outing rather than Sunbutter plus a few local individuals planting vegetation.
Thanks very much, Tom, and thanks very much, Mel. I mean, one of the things that comes through here, Tom, I think you're in your factory. I'm pretty sure it's down at Hastings at the moment. Mel, you're zooming in from what is possibly your home, and I guess what we're demonstrating through this series is that really everyone can make a positive difference to climate change. And you know, you might hear a little bit of wind noise in the back of Tom's factory there, but I think this just demonstrates that, you know, it's happening all across the peninsula in different places and maybe in ways that we don't always see. I know for regeneration projects, when we made this pitch to the Mornington Peninsula Shire through their climate grant program, you know, you just ask yourself, what can you do? And for us, you know, Claire and I had started this Voices of Regen podcast going back a couple of years, and, you know, what could a local interpretation of that be? But yeah, I guess this is sometimes what doesn't always happen. We talk about climate change in that really global sense, but rarely do we actually localize it and think about who are the champions in one specific region and what's their relationship with a couple of, you know, bays and their bushland and their seagrass and all of these things that we're talking about here. So yeah, it's just super nice and refreshing in many ways to be talking in this way. I guess, you know, Claire, you picked on it before, and Tom, you were really eloquent in sharing that what is good for climate is also good for business. The two are interconnected. And I guess that's a bit of a counter argument for some of the narratives that we hear. Some, you know, people say that you've got to be profitable first to then have a, you know, then get involved in social and environmental initiatives. But we are talking from a different school of purpose-driven business here, which is also really empowering and refreshing. Tom, is there an example where, you know, you've implemented something in the business that's had a positive benefit for climate and the environment, but also being able to see that tangible business outcome as well?
Yeah, Matt, I think one recent example is we just became the world's first certified palm oil free sunscreen company. And obviously the palm oil industry is hugely detrimental to pristine primary growth rainforests and peat marshes. We think of Indonesia, Sumatra, Borneo, places like that. And sadly, I've seen firsthand the degradation and devastation that palm oil industry causes. So that was a huge one for us, for the planet and the environment, to ensure that all of our formulas and products don't contain any palm oil or palm oil derived ingredients. So a big win for us, and hopefully a little win for the planet with one less brand using palm oil or palm oil derived things. But also just being able to add that certification, it opened us up to new retailers that only stock palm oil free products. And it's something great for the planet and great for our company ethos that we could sing and dance about. So when we finally got that certification over the line after a couple of years of pretty hard work, it was great, and definitely saw an uptick in sales from an economical point of view. Great for us and our ethos for the planet. And yeah, it was a good step for business as well.
Oh, that's sensational, Tom. Congratulations to you and the team. That's what an incredible example of, you know, global leadership in our own backyard. And as you say, like the way that that opens up new commercial opportunities for you, that's such a great, great incentive and great example. You know, as you were talking or referencing the palm oil, it took me back to Borneo when I was visiting in 2019. And I remember literally just seeing this endless landscape of the palms and what was formerly forest. And it'd kind of be the equivalent of imagining what Wonga or Arthur's Seat and the bushland around that. Just imagine that just being gone and all of that being converted into palm oil plantation for our listeners. It's a really strange image. Like imagine driving down towards, you know, going to your local you know, favorite beach spot or the hot springs or a vineyard for the day, and then you're greeted by a palm plantation. But that is actually what is happening in these places, and it's where examples like what Tom and Sasha are doing at Sunbelt is just so vital for what's going on in our own backyards, but also vital for those global supply chains as well. Mel, if we flip across to you, you know, what's an example? I know that you're a nonprofit organization at the Biosphere, but I guess what's an example of something either that you've done through a partnership or something internally within your organization where there's been that win-win situation?
Yeah, I guess one example of that's probably our water stewardship program, which we've run for a number of years. And that's all about working with local businesses or schools or property owners. And it's about how does water move through their land, and are there ways of managing it more effectively so that you can both improve the quality of the water that's there and reduce the quantity that you need to get out of the tap. So in terms of the business benefit, it can just be a money saver, because if they can retain water on the land, in the landscape, in the way it used to be, that way they won't need to pay for water externally. But sometimes it can also be picking up Tom's point where he was saying that when they got their accreditation, their sales went through the roof. And I think increasingly we're seeing people, when they make choices about what they buy or where they go, they're looking for businesses that are doing something for the planet as well, and, you know, trying to minimise their impact. So for some of these organisations, the benefit can also be that they'll increase their customers or increase their sales. So it's good for the environment, but it's also good from a business perspective. And sometimes what we do is sort of work with the owner of that property, and it's in the end just coming up with a plan. A lot of them have kind of thought about some ideas, and it's really just going through that process of sitting down with one of our experts and just kind of documenting it. And then they can chip their way through it and say, well, this year I'm going to fence off the creek that runs through my property to make sure it's higher quality, and I might do some revegetation to protect it as well. And then next year I'm going to do this other thing. But it kind of gives them a plan and a way forward to improve the sustainability of their business. And so we now have a network of organisations that have done that around the Mornington Peninsula. But we know that there's more, and certainly keen to work with other organisations so that they can, you know, pick up Tom's points about doing something that's good for the planet, but also good for their business as well.
Mel, I love that response. And also thinking back to what Tom said, I think both of you have made some really good points around that notion of doing good for the planet doesn't have to come at the expense of business success. And you've both demonstrated that it's quite the contrary. It shouldn't be rocket science that humans and the planet, when one group benefits, or when one stakeholder benefits, the other stakeholder benefits as well. And so I think these are really nice examples of how that can look in practice. And also, Mel, that point you made around not trying to do everything at once and just giving people really tangible steps and a couple of things that they can focus on now, today, rather than trying to solve all of the world's problems in one go and getting overwhelmed and maybe getting nowhere. I think their concept of chipping away, as you said, is really valuable.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, that's true of us in our personal lives as well, of like if you've got too much on, you're just going to go into I can't cope. So by having that kind of structured plan and also knowing where you're going to have greatest impact first, because I think sometimes people are like, well, I could do five things, but which is the best thing to go and start with? It just kind of helps to target and prioritise the actions so that they can get the biggest impact. And for us, it's very much about bringing expertise from different places. So we partner with Landcare and some other organisations and also experts, and it's bringing all that together so that you can get the best outcome. Because there's amazing people that live and work on the Mornington Peninsula. And one of the things I love about my job is getting to, you know, meet all these people like Tom and others who are just doing great work. And I think collectively we can have an even greater impact together.
Yeah, absolutely. Mel, just building on that, I'd be really curious to know how you go about prioritising where you're going to be able to have the biggest impact.
Yeah, I think it depends on, you know, what the thing is. So, you know, we work across a number of different programs. And I think at the outset, trying to be clear about what are we doing this for and why is really important. And again, it's, you know, checking in with other people that have different levels of expertise in different areas to land that at the beginning. So the Mornington Peninsula is internationally significant. And, you know, Matt's analogy, if we were to, you know, raise some bushland and put palm oil there, it's not just, I guess, the visual of that, it's the consequence that would have for our biodiversity. Like our all the animals depend on the ecosystems that are there. So it's about thinking about it as an integrated whole. And one of the things that, you know, for us is really important is that connectedness in the landscape. Like a lot of our landscapes have become quite fragmented now because of these roads and towns and those sort of things. And it's acknowledging that and saying, okay, well, given that, how can we best connect all these landscapes together so that biodiversity can thrive, but those of us that, you know, live or work or visit down here can also thrive as well. They're not either or. It's not it's not one or the other. We can have both. We just need to plan it at the front end.
Yeah, absolutely. That's brilliant, Mel. I'd love to now turn this conversation into a little bit of an action focus, something that is really important to us on the Two Bays podcast is giving our listeners something really tangible that they can take out of it. And also with the benefit of hindsight that you two bring, I would love to hear from you. If you could go back in time to when you were right at the start of your climate journey, what advice would you give your past self? Tom, I might start with you.
Yeah, it's a bit mean, Claire. You should ask Mel first, I think. Hindsight to earlier self when we were starting out, I think, like we keep touching upon, small steps make big impacts. and good habits turn into great habits and great practices. So I think in a Sun Butter journey, we've been really lucky that the planet has always been so core to our beliefs and our actions. And we've always led with putting the planet first, and having that as our mantra has kept us steering on the right path. I think from a personal perspective, like you were touching on, it's so easy to get overwhelmed with huge global issues, but the focus on your backyard or things that you can solve. And, you know, some of the problems are so big that we're just waiting for like Elon Musk to step in with billions and billions and fix it. But maybe we can find actionable items that are a lot more achievable for all of us in our local areas. And, you know, there's plenty of great organizations, Mel, for example, doing good things. And if that feels too big as a, you know, biosphere is a scary word to you, then just go and plant some trees with the MP Koala Mob. And, you know, you're doing great things there for habitat corridors. And it's a fun family day out. So, yeah, just being available to sort of step into to things locally. And I think as you touched on as well, Claire, there's so many businesses doing good for the planet now that you just that realization that every dollar we spend has a choice on the type of planet we want to live on. And any product that you need, there will be someone doing a planet friendly alternative. And it might seem a lot easier to run to a big supermarket and grab everything off the shelf, but it's those small steps of, just for example, getting your sunscreen on a repeat order from us every 3 months will handle all of that. New sunscreen turns up, jobs are good. And same for, you know, who gives a crap toilet paper? You don't even need to think about it. Turns up on your door and, you know, it's a business doing great things for the planet. So just having that awareness, I think.
Tom, that's brilliant. I think also reflecting, again, going back to what Mel said earlier in our conversation around finding a few things that you can do rather than trying to do everything all at once. I remember, I think it was a cartoon I saw on the internet one time, and it was talking about where the best places to make change when it comes to things like the biodiversity crisis, the climate crisis. And it talked about how trying to do everything on your own can be really overwhelming. Trying to wait on, as you said, the Elon Musks of this world, Tom, to change everything at that sort of big corporate level is also pretty overwhelming. And the idea of being able to make change at the community level, that is often the sweet spot where it's possible to make a meaningful impact without needing to wait for somebody who's much bigger and much more powerful than you to make some massive system disruption that's going to change the way that we look at the world. So I really like those practical examples that you gave around tangible steps that people can take. Mel, I'd love to hear from you, thinking back to lessons you've learned along the way, advice you give your past self.
Thanks, Claire. Coincidentally, my climate journey started at the same time of the Biosphere Foundation, though there was no relationship between those two things. So it was about 20 years ago where I was actually travelling and decided I didn't want to be doing the job I had been doing. I enjoyed it, but I wasn't passionate about it. So I ended up doing a career change 20 years ago. I went back to uni and learnt more about, environmental science. And so my past self 20 years ago, what would I tell myself? I think I was, number one, I would say the climate journey is a critical one for all of us. And I guess both on a personal level and on a professional level. So what can we do in our personal lives and for the decisions that we make? What do we buy? Where do we go? All those kind of things. What organisations we work with, but also professionally, what do we want to do and how do we want to do it so that, you know, we contribute positively through the work that we do. So that would be number one, you know, stick to the climate journey because it's really critical, but think about it both as an individual but also through the work that you do. And then number two is picking up the point that you just made, Claire, is that working with others will have a bigger impact rather than thinking you need to shoulder this burden alone. There's a whole lot of people out there that are keen to go on the journey, and I find that really heartening about the really positive community on the Mornington Peninsula and the willingness to work together. And it is very much by all working together, we're going to have that bigger impact. So there are lots of opportunities and it's about, you know, what works for any one person. Is that, you know, connecting through a local landcare group to go and do some planting, or is it sort of getting some more information through social media? I think there's a whole range of different options there. And it's just about doing whatever works for you to start chipping away at your own personal climate impact and thinking what you can do. And it just brings a real sense of satisfaction, I think. You think, well, I'm contributing in a positive way And there's some statistic about, do you want, you know, 10,000 people all doing one thing or one person doing as much as they can? And the answer is 10,000 people doing a little bit is way more impactful than, you know, a couple of people doing a lot. So that's kind of where we need to get to as a society, is all of us doing some stuff and chipping it away at it, so that, in the end, we're more fulfilled as humans and the planet benefits as well.
Well, wait, haven't we gone on a journey in this conversation? We've literally, Tom is clapping there, and absolutely, you know, we've moved between such different scales, you know, literally from a tin of sunscreen that we can hold in our hands and put on our nose to make sure that we don't get burnt when we're out in the sun, to this idea of a biosphere which takes up and encompasses the whole of the peninsula and the bays either side of it. You know, anywhere in between there, it looks like we can get in and do something about it. And, you know, it came out in some of the things that you were sharing, that sense of kind of overwhelm and frustration and even anxiety. You know, eco-anxiety and climate anxiety is very, very present. You know, it's also very present, especially for young people in our community. And a shout out to them and climate strikers, you know, that have to kind of grapple with that. But I think what we're hearing here is that possibility of hope, of opportunity, and kind of taking that anxiety and turning it into action. If anyone is experiencing anxiety and that is kind of being more of a weight than it should, then please don't ever feel afraid to reach out for help, you know, via Lifeline or Beyond Blue, these platforms. You know, it's actually more common than you realize. Climate anxiety was actually one of the triggers for me starting regeneration projects. And to be honest, you know, having a business and hearing the stories of Mel and Tom, it actually makes you feel more confident about getting up, because it takes you out of that cycle of seeing just those negative things. Look, if we try and, you know, close out here, you know, there's so many great lessons, and, you know, from the way that a small business runs its operations to the way that a community-based organization is educating and advocating and creating these connections between diverse organizations. So we really hope that you find a space in amongst that landscape that you feel like you could take a step as well. Thank you so much, Mel. Thank you so much, Tom. Western Port Biosphere, Sunbutter Skincare, for the incredible work that you do. Mornington Peninsula Shire Council for supporting us in this series, and Claire for again stepping in and being up for this adventure as we kick off the Two Bays podcast here. It's been an absolute pleasure. Stay tuned until our next episode of the Two Bays podcast. Over and out. How amazing are those Mornington Peninsula climate champions? Must be something in the water. Against the odds, they're transforming climate anxiety into climate action. Keep your eyes out for new episodes coming soon. So you're feeling inspired and ready to act. What can you do next? Firstly, subscribe to the Two Bays podcast on your favorite channel. Then visit the Regeneration Project's website for more info about our ecological leadership and strategic consultancy work. Lastly, don't forget to follow Regeneration Projects on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn, as well as subscribe to our seasonal newsletter. My name is Matt, and on behalf of Regeneration Projects and the Two Bays, thank you for tuning in, and see you on the next episode of Two Bays, a Business and a Kitchen Table podcast.